belongs to entrepreneurs, but why are South Africans not using that opportunity? Or is it an opportunity? Because sometimes if you are not an entrepreneur, you think it's an opportunity, whereas it is not. Okay.
Most of those rock places are mountainous regions, but inaccessible. The other part is some farms, privately owned farms. That's the other one. And then it's difficult to replicate them because you actually have to go to the rock face and actually almost trace them. And according to our law, it's prohibited to do that. So that might explain some of the reasons why it's not sold on the open market.
We cannot sell heritage. The special law of that nature, which is very scarce and is protected by law, chairperson. So if you're intending to take it, then we take it straight to jail.
It depends
on the site itself. For the camera that you use and the flash might have an impact on the painting.
Oh.
Yeah. And also the beginning then to conscientize the owners in that commas of those paintings to say reproduction rights as well. So that then whosoever wants to paint somewhere and sell, we then interact with the owners of those paintings.
As a group, we were denied by a tour guide to see where Sarah Bartman was staged. And she said she doesn't know anything about that person. So if we happen to get such people, what must we do? Who denies the truth as a tour guide?
Perhaps they've got another name for Sarah Bartman.
I mean, she was famous. You are West. That is why they hid it from you. Yeah, that is the reason why.
Okay.
Extending this important invitation to us so that we come here and be part of this important engagement. Chairperson, we are very much aware as the National House that we are a friend to Parliament because most of the committees of Parliament invite us when they have got activities, particularly activities which affect the rural communities. Maybe the other thing is because Parliament, it is the one which passes legislation, and therefore they are always aware that there are these legislations which affect the institution of traditional leadership as well as the rural communities. But let me highlight this chairperson that of all the institutions of government, or organs of state. As I said earlier on, it is only parliament which normally interacts with the institution of traditional leaders of all organs, including departments. If I can tell you, Chairperson and Honorable Members of Parliament, we might be meeting the Department of Tourism, Arts and Culture for the first time here. But you look at arts and culture. It is the department which was supposed to be very, very close to the institution of traditional leaders, because it is dealing with cultures of the diverse community of this country. And the institution is the custodian of these cultures. And if you look at their activities, this department, they concentrate more on the art, this drawing art, and maybe the singers in the country, like Wo Mbuli, Wo, all these singers, Womzwake Mbuli and others. And you also look at those important singers, traditional dancers in our various provinces. You look at them and check as to who is looking after these people, because always they will interact with traditional leaders. Where can we get funding? Who can promote us? You know, all these important questions, they will raise them with us. And mind you, as the National House, in terms of our legislation, as I will just outline just now, we don't have mandate, you know, to fund any institution, what, and all those things, because of the size of the budget. Even maybe because of the mandate given to us by the legislation. So you find that you don't even know what to do, because the department is there. And our belief is that all these departments of government, they are aware of the legislation which looks after the institution of traditional leadership. All the departments of government, they are aware. And they are doing nothing, most of them. Chairperson, once again, I think it is important for us to really appreciate the passion and the zeal Parliament is having on us, in working with us, in dealing with us. We really appreciate that. And we are saying this relationship must continue. Chairperson, let me just give the background of our institution. And I'm giving this background not to Parliament, mind you, I'm giving to tourism and arts and culture, that we are in existence, we are existing as an institution of traditional leadership. And this institution is one of the oldest institutions on earth. The institution used to do a lot of things which most of the government departments are doing now. It used to perform most of those duties which you are, government is performing now. Before colonialism, during colonialism, and even during apartheid. Chairperson, this institution must really appreciate the former president, President Nelson Mandela, because during the discussions, during the CODESA and all those other engagements, he contributed a lot to the existence of this institution. And therefore, I think it is important for us as an institution to appreciate his input, his contribution, and also the fact that the institution be part of the constitution of the country. He is the one who fought for that. We are very much aware. And now, the constitution of the country, yes, we agree, it recognizes us as an institution, but we feel the constitution was supposed to have gone further than that. And just, you know, because the most important thing is the guarantee, so that even other people who are against the institution don't get even a chance to touch the institution. We've got an example. We went to Ghana. Most of our constitution was copied from that one of Ghana. And you look at the manner in which the institution of traditional leadership is captured in that constitution. It is guaranteed. And that constitution was crafted during Kwame Nkrumah. Kwame Nkrumah, as the president, the first president of Ghana, said the institution of chieftaincy must be there, and no one must be able to have an access of trying to play around with the institution, because the institution is the custodian of the culture, customs, traditions of the Ghanaian people. And up until this today, that chapter, which is chapter 22 of the Ghana constitution, is still like that. And in our case, tourism and arts and culture, they are very much aware that chapter 12 of our constitution, which is section 211 and 212, they talk about the institution of traditional leadership. And in spite of all that, they don't even bother themselves by engaging the institution itself. Chairperson, the institution derives its mandate from a number of legislations. The National House of Traditional Leaders Act, which was repealed last year. We've got a new act of 2009. The Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, which is Act number 41 of 2003, as amended. The Municipal Structures Act, Section 81, which allocates, you know, some about 20 seats to traditional leaders in municipalities, in local government. Provincial legislations, there are a lot throughout the country, including here in Cape Town, where people say there are no traditional leaders. We are going to establish the house here in Cape Town, including Gauteng. Gauteng, already we've got two traditional leaders in Amanskraal and in what is the name of the other place? Yeah, in the surrounding of on the way to Nelspruit, just after Pretoria, there is another traditional leader there who falls under Gauteng. Now, all these legislations are part of the legislations which mandates the or which gives the institution of traditional leadership mandate to operate legally. We are saying this so that these two departments which are here today must know and understand that from now onwards, they must, from the planning stage, not during conferences where they would want us to come and be passive, you know, participants. No, we want to be part and parcel from the planning stage. As the president said this year when he was opening parliament, the National House here in parliament, that era where traditional leaders used to be the supporters, the what must come to an end. Traditional leaders must be full participants on any activity in the country, including initiating projects. But we are saying, yes, we said to the president, yes, we welcome the initiative by the president. But the most important thing which can unlock that is by amending the constitution. That will give us enough space to can play a better role than what we are doing now. You know, the experiences we are having now with a number of municipalities in the country, it is because, you know, traditionally they are sitting there just watching what is happening, where traditional leaders are part of the council. But because they don't have mandate to vote in terms of the law, they just fold their arms and watch while things are happening. So we want, the president is saying we must change that setup. And we are welcoming that, and we are saying parliament must do something in order to allow traditional leaders to play that role, which is required by the president. I've just alluded here a number of legislations which give, you know, traditional leaders mandates. And we are saying, as an institution, chairperson, traditional leaders have got a lot of wisdom, which we are not even tapping on it as a government. A lot of wisdom regarding the issue of environment, the question of arts and culture, and even tourism. You know, there are lots of, if you go down to Venda, you'll see the caves, the what, and all those things. They are just lying fallow there because those people don't have, you know, the resources to can start doing something there. So, having given you this background, chairperson, and also the issue of the mandate, we have got a lot of challenges. Part of the challenges, I've just highlighted them there. The challenges we are faced with as the institution, the first one is the one I've just spoken about, that of making sure that traditional leaders participate fully by amending the constitution. Because these ordinary legislations, you know, they will move and stop somewhere. So it is important. We are also going to meet with the commission, which deals with the question of reviewing the constitution of the country on Friday. We'll be meeting with them in order to address this question of the constitution. So we are saying, that is the first thing which we need to address. The second thing, it is the resources that the rural people, because it is not for traditional leaders, it is for the people. We don't have the resources. These departments they are lying with lots, huge amounts. And we don't know where they are using these things, because roughly 23 to 24 million people are lying there in the rural area. And they are not accessing these monies, you know, of which they are also taxpayers to it, and they don't access it. Let us do something. Because the president, when he was opening the house, he said the Department of Rural Development has got an amount of 800 million. How to access that money, it is difficult to know. How to access it. And again, because of that background which I've just given, it is difficult. So we need to do something. The next challenge which we are having as an institution is the skill, the capacity building of traditional leaders and their communities. You know, you look at the setup in the rural area. Really, it is difficult to develop something which is tangible, which you as a department will recognize as a maybe a business plan or something like that. We don't have skills. Skills which will help us even to manage some of the structures which government is doing, is putting there in our area. We don't have skills to manage those things. We need skills. The other question or challenge which we are faced with is that when government does its consultation processes, the rural masses are left out in most of the cases. I'll give one important example. Recently, I think you are aware that NESA conducted, you know, a survey or maybe a public hearing throughout the country. But those consultations by NESA, it was by the time when they wanted to give, you know, that hike of tariff, to ESCOM, they visited all metros throughout the country. We were watching, we were looking at those things, and they never consulted with the rural masses of this country. And when the decision was taken to allow ESCOM to increase its tariff, it was just like a lightning, you know, that you are allowed. Go and do that so that you cover this and that and that. Leaving out the rural masses who do not have job opportunities, first and foremost. The second thing, no development. And these people, you know, they are struggling even to pay that electricity. Last weekend, I was at home. A lot of my people were calling me saying, Kosi, we are no longer using electricity now. We are going to cut trees. Now, what about environment now? If these people could go and cut trees, because of the manner in which electricity is hitting on them. These are some of the problems we are faced with. I've spoken about the participation of traditional leaders and their involvement. Now, the other thing, which is very much crucial, it is the question of awareness. You know, in the past, Government would send its what do you call them, documents, policy documents, and all those things, you know, from parliament and from government to traditional councils, so that they are able to take them to their people and to share with communities. Those things are no longer happening since I think I'm not counting the era of apartheid and those other things, but since the new dispensation, we have forgotten that one. And I am pleading with Parliament here to instruct all government departments to say, please, information from government must reach the people, must go to the people. There are offices, traditional councils, are lying out throughout the country. Why don't we send them there? So that people are able to access this information before they can even use that legislation which allows them even to pin down government if it does not release information to them. Let us do something as government. I think we have covered a lot of things. Otherwise, the question of art and culture, the question of tourism, all these other things, traditional leaders are ready to participate as long as they are given an opportunity, a space to play their role. We are ready. And there are a lot of opportunities outside there in the rural area for tourism to flourish. A lot of opportunities, but they are not being used. So, Chairperson, although we did not get enough space to put down our things together, we're just informed this morning, these are a few things we feel we need to highlight. I think if the CEO has got something, he will also say a few things, if there are issues left out. Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, maybe just to add on what the Chairperson of the National House of Traditional Leaders has said, maybe it's also important to note that in the legislation that provides for the institution of traditional leadership, the issue of promoting socio-economic development of the communities is one of the functions of the institution. From traditional councils at local level up to the National House. Also the issue of promoting service delivery and participating in service delivery. And also the issue of preserving, you know, the culture, the traditions, etc. Of the people. Maybe just, I know you do have copies of the presentation that we prepared quickly. If we can go to the slide that says specific roles in development and tourism. Unfortunately, the slides are not numbered. But if you look, for instance, at the Traditional Leadership and Framework, Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, you know, the issue of economic development is one issue where, for instance, the department responsible for economic development must work with traditional leaders. The Department of Tourism, for instance, must work with traditional leaders. The department that deals with natural resources must work with traditional leaders. Arts and culture and environment. These are some of the key functions that government through legislation has said traditional leaders must be involved in through the departments that are working in those functions. So I think from a legislative point of view, Chair, it's imperative that the government departments responsible for these functions do involve traditional leaders. As it has been said, Chairperson, the main complaint from traditional leaders is that they are not involved in all these processes. that are meant to develop their communities, that are meant also to exploit the resources that are there in rural areas, that are meant to promote tourism, that are meant to promote economic development. So their main complaint is that they are not always involved. There are some of them who are involved, but it's not a standard thing that everyone will involve them. So if there's an element of discretion to some of the municipalities and government departments to involve them. So they are saying they must begin to be able to harness all the resources and the rich cultural heritage of South Africa in the rural areas. And also to ensure that, you know, all the benefits coming from these areas, you know, accrue to the local people and also accrue to traditional communities. Because right now, you know, there's very, very little, if at all, that goes to these people. I mean, there are many examples that we can make of things where traditional does need to be involved, but I don't want to waste much time because I think the chairperson has made quite an extensive presentation around this. But safe to say that all the tourism activities that are happening in rural areas, the view is to say, let traditional does be involved, let traditional communities be involved, and let the benefit coming out of all these activities also accrue to the local people in traditional areas. I think I'll end it there, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
I think the input was a very, very valuable one. And on the one hand, the point of partnership was stressed by both the departments, the Department of Arts and Culture and the Department of Tourism. But perhaps it did not extend to the Department of Traditional Leaders. But let us also not forget that the House nationally has just been established. So now there is a person now, there is Mr. Mpungose now, that the DG from their office now are going to consult. I'm not going to talk on their behalf, but I think they are going to relay this message strongly to DDGs. But let us not forget that the structure has just been formed. And I think most of them have high regard for the institution. But the way that we were structured or we are structured is not perfect, is not ideal. But also our democracy is not that old. 16 years in terms of government is no time. It's like 1 month in compared to your institution that has been there since humankind began. So in as much as we've got to make a point, let us also look at the other side, that from now on a step has been made and every journey begins with the first step. And we are thanking you very much for educating us. We have learned, and we have learned a lot, and by that I mean all of us. And DGs and departments also have a lot of competing needs. If there is no voice, and that is advocacy now, from your sector or from the institution, it's very easy that you get left out, but you find out that sometimes it's not by intention, but because of the noise that is there in governance now. This you attend to this. Hey, attend to me. Hey, attend to me. Parliament, the private sector, the businesses, SA Tourism, the institutes that they work with. So I propose that the CEO tries to interact directly with our institution here, EMATGs, and just sit with them and map up your future, map out your future and your expectations. Remember, as different stakeholders, we have not harmonized our expectations. From where you stand, you think you are correct. From where other people think they think they are correct. Unless we sit down and say, from where I stand, you are wrong. That is not going to be corrected. So let us make sure that we sit down and iron out the basic now. That is the fundamental step. Because the correctly starts with our fundamentals. And then without dealing with fundamentals, it's no use going forward. It's no use getting to the details. The fundamentals are understood. I think we all agree on the first step. Communication. And on information, we have a department called the CGIS. What is the full name of the CGIS? GCI, Government Communication Information Services. I think here also, let us have a direct contact with them. Because those are the people that give you by email, information by email, by booklets, and statements, and everything. And then especially before it reaches any traditional leader, it should land on the desk of Mr. Mpungose for him just to distribute or do whatever after interacting with them. And but the issue of constantly harmonizing expectations, objectives, that should be ongoing because we are a democracy. The issue of the constitution is going to be contested all along. And here in a democracy, we've got to persuade and be persuasive all the time. Because once one side is quiet, the other stands up and states its case. Once the other side is quiet, the other stands up and states its case. So now, this department called the PRO, Public Relations, has got to be to be there. And it depends on the resources you are having. If the resources are not enough, I think advocacy and promotion for the resources has a case to be made there. I think those are the few areas that I wanted just to address as fundamentals. We've got to communicate. We have learned a lot. Let us continue to engage. So let us ask then the question for further clarification. Mamunjobe, Mamushin, Mamuchiva. Yeah, in fact, we are receiving a message that the bank hotel manager apologizes for the noise. It is beyond their control as it comes from another building. Yeah, but I think that, I mean, they did not know that the other people are going to be driven, and really, I think we deserved this apology. Thank you. Thank the hotel manager for the kind. Mamunjob.
We don't want to hear at the last minute that people are chasing their flights and so on and so forth. So please let's be assured that the presenters will be here. I'm talking about the discussions, because now we are still just asking questions. This thing is here. I would like to thank the host for the presentation. And I think the part for me, which I think will be very useful when I get time to read it, it is the question of the key functions of houses of traditional leaders, the key functions of traditional councils, you know. I think there you are opening us to some information which probably we are not really that much aware of. You spoke about the constitution of Ghana and how it has influenced our own constitution and legislation on traditional leadership. On this very question of traditional councils, my understanding is that currently we are implementing a legislation on traditional councils. I don't know whether I'm using the right terminology. Traditional councillors. These people are going to be elected by the community to join the municipalities. What do you call them?
You mean the legislation which is...
Yeah, the legislation that is now being... I think it's being implemented. I know in my area people are beginning to canvass, you know, to be elected almost. Anyway, I hope you understand what I'm talking about. That's right. Now, those are the people I'm talking about. I don't know what they are actually called. Now, I'm saying that one of the problems that we have identified, once we had created the current local government, in the rural areas, there seems to be a conflict between the working of the local government and the traditional institution in the areas, you see. And the functions did not seem to be well identified. So there were these conflicts time and again. They still continue anyway. Each one claiming that this is our responsibility, and the other one saying this is our responsibility. Now, I wanted to find out whether the Ghanaian, how the Ghanaian constitution is addressing this problem. Because, as you say, they have promoted the traditional institutions, but at the same time, Ghana has got a system of government which is similar to ours in that we were both colonized by Britain. I'm sure they do have local government councils. How do these two work together in that country so that we can learn from their lessons and try and solve our own problems? Now, the second question, Chairperson, is about this promotion of social development of communities as one of the functions of the traditional leadership. Yes, you are clear that the governments have, the departments don't necessarily involve the traditional leadership on programs and so on and so forth. But I wanted to find out from the other side, what has the traditional leadership itself done to ensure that the department do involve them? Particularly that, again, you are listing here the functions of the traditional leadership. For instance, in relation to tourism itself, you have listed there about 2, 4, 5 bullets. I mean, they're so direct, they're so obvious that the traditional leadership should have been involved in all these functions. But what has the traditional leadership itself done to motivate, you know, the department, to ensure that the department do include them or involve them?
I think the CEO will respond to maybe the second issue. Let me respond to this one, the relationship.
Let us have a number of questions so that when you respond, you can respond.
Maybe the two issues of I want to know what the communities are doing in their own areas to preserve and cultivate a sense of pride in traditional issues amongst their communities. I'm thinking in particular of school children. I mean, what do they know about their heritage and their culture and the history of the area in which they grow up? And I base it on the fact that, Paul, if you're wanting strangers to be interested in your culture. Your own people have to be interested in it and demonstrate a sense of pride and an ownership of it. You know, so if they don't value it, no one else is going to value it. So I want to know what programs, initiatives are happening through your institution to preserve and instill that sense of pride in traditions. Secondly, I want to know whether the traditional leaders have at all entertained the idea of approaching successful businesses to actually contribute financially, perhaps, to some sort of business plan strategy that you may have to promote and preserve your traditions and culture and language. And I'm thinking of perhaps the example of the Jewish people, who are perhaps the most successful fundraisers to preserve their heritage, which they believe is under threat. I mean, once they find a successful Jewish person, they don't let him go until he's dead, because they make sure that they get most of the money to preserve their traditions and their cultures. I mean, there could be a tremendous campaign for traditional leaders to get hold of businesses to, and it might need some sort of tweaking on the legislation on board economic empowerment, to actually have support for traditional development or preservation as part of a corporate social responsibility strategy. They might be able to get points or tax deductions or something like that. But because I think that we need to realize that government, the taxpayers are increasingly stressed by the demands on them. And I think we actually need to be sort of more creative perhaps in getting money other ways. Just an idea. Thank you. It's your turn.
Thank you. I think what the House of Traditional Leaders have presented to us is just an eye-opener to us as lawmakers. Knowing that they are the custodians of culture, it's true that we need not to leave them behind. Culturally, our children have no idea what's going on traditionally. The reason why is that there is a clash of cultures. More especially when we talk of civilization, we always talk of the Western civilization, which we want to capture. Always, we just talk about it, but we don't want to. If we want to mix it, we have to mix it. But the other cultures are rejecting to come to our own culture. It's just that we enjoy them as they are entertaining us. But if we can really understand the Bible well, when King Solomon was about to be installed to be a king, God wanted him to ask something, but God instilled or sort of like knocking in his brain that ask wisdom. We always forget that there is wisdom in our own people, in our own people. That's why the cultures are still, you know, how can I put it really in my own language? You know, knocking, not even, no.
Put it in your language.
You won't be able to interpret. To crush other cultures as if they're not living. I will be more specific because I'm too harsh to my explanation. The Western civilization is still dominating us, thinking that they are wonderful. I know it's politics. If we say that we are South African, like King Koshi Kutama even indicated Ghanaians, not long they've beaten us. I mean, in soccer, you can't even know the spirit which they really, really came up with. They might have been motivated culturally that you are people like other people. Show them, and they did it because they do maybe understand their culture, that they have to work as one. like I'm saying that wisdom is really on top. Places of heritage sites are known by traditional leaders and the people down there. But we claim to be knowing those places, like you indicated. There are ritual places which you can't just go there unless you go through them. And how are we going to generate money as a country by not knowing those places? And know the reason why are they captured like that. I will be more specific to my own, and Koshi Otame knows that we have the Chibase have their own special drum, which they used to beat it. Then Papuri also, they have their own special whistle, which they used to blow it and finish all the enemies without even entering them. The Rambo, the people, they have their strategic way of fighting. But we're letting those things to just, and they're denying with this Ngomarungu. Do you know Ngomarungu? It's Ngomarungu, there's a special drum. And that special, but they're denying with that special drum. Why? It means that not that the Chivasi people is taken by the Pretoria. That's why I'm harsh to say such things. They don't want to take it back to their people so that their people should also economically benefit from that thing. And then the other, I'm just tipping you. And then the other thing is that when we take our own cultures as inferior to the Western cultures, it's an insult to our people. It's really a big insult. Because in other words, we're undermining their intelligence, which we need not to. Because everybody has got his or her own intelligence, given by God. But if we work with the traditional leaders, we know that's where it is. That's where wealth is. I said I'm not even asking questions. I'm just adding. It's an input, it's a contribution. That if we work hand in hand, like they have already highlighted their challenges, and that's where our people are, which need to be boosted economically by whatever they do. They know places, the places of sacred places are known by them, and our people won't be able to know where they are. What were they for? Kort en bondig.
Thank you.
According to my understanding, all the houses are part of council in the municipality, where they contribute on the IDPs and budget of municipalities. I may agree that maybe some they don't have skills, but they are part of municipalities. What we need to do is that how is the House of Traditional Leaders intervene on the issues of the skills? Because the main department which can assist them is the COGTA, the Cooperative Government and Traditional Affairs, where they should go and give them their challenges on the issues of skills. Somehow, we also have the complaints on the issues of Makoshis, because some they contribute on the issue on the issues that made by the council. For example, we were having the memorandum of understanding between four Makoshis of Moritale and the municipal council on how they should work together, and we were suffering to get Kosi Makaban. Always he's absent. And they were given a chance to bring along their legal advisors so that they may understand the issues. It failed because they were always absent. And most of the projects, because it's the center of Moritale Makapanstad, they should happen in Makapanstad. Though we suffer for the development of Moritale because of the Kosi Makapa. So I'm saying the House of Tradition must work closely with the COGTA on their challenges. It's the main department that should help them. Also agree that the Department of Tourism and Art and Culture, they should also give them chance to give them their proposals according to what they need in the rural areas. Also, give them chance to contribute on your budget. How should you help them to get those projects and be part of those projects? I think, Chair, I'll pause.
Before we go on, let us look at the issues so as to benefit the most of the rare presence of Amakosi. And by saying that, all complaints that have been put here are justified. Having said that, also as leaders, we have a responsibility to be positive and say, this is what should happen, this is what should happen, this is what should happen. Given these constraints, this is what should happen. Here, we should have a meeting with so-and-so and sit down and discuss these issues. Because otherwise, I mean, we are not going to lead the country properly if we don't do that and we complain. Otherwise, we are going to lead the country into a fight. So I think let us make sure that we deal with that and deal with that thoroughly. And then secondly, there are areas in history. For instance, when Tweetwayo was going to be fighting against the British, he was assisted by Skukoni. But that is not in our history. It is as if the Zulu people were on their own. But Skukuni came to Shaka and gave us to and gave assistance. That is that information people who are not chiefs are not having. People who are not near this, because written history does not mention that. I can go on and with Dingane as well, what happened from the side, why he was called a witch, because he went to where the secrets of the family went, and then normally if you are found there, even if you are black, you are called a witch. So it's these things that are distinct are from misinterpretations. I'm not going to say it's propaganda because I do not know, but what I know is that the information is not correct, and it is not correct because we are not engaged in correcting the information and sitting down, whether it's colonizers or whatever, sit down and come up with something that is agreed. South Africa has started on a good note. It has got to continue on that note. This now I say for all of us inside here. The other thing, I expected to hear expectations from Amakosi of what should we best do with Mapungubwe. What should we do best about Tweetwayo's house which was rebuilt, and Dingane's house that was rebuilt. What should be done with those things? What is allowed, what is not allowed, what is expected in terms of sustainable livelihoods, in terms of jobs, in terms of what is allowed, where people can go, where people cannot go, and so forth. In as far as those ruins are concerned, in as much as people have rights, rights are always competing. There is, if any government wants to build a road, it can remove anybody, any government now, American government, British government, and so forth. So, but as long as that interest is elevated and it is public interest, it is for us to prove that it is public interest or not. If you have not gone beyond proving it is public interest, you have a difficulty, because the courts will reverse any decision that is. But I mean, substantiating it and then giving it a status of public interest over private interest, because those are the two things that you've got to play about when you look at things and make people realize that it is. And then if you look at the first page of the Constitution, it says we've got to be inclusive. But now, to be inclusive, we've got to try and debate these things and see. And then when we go to our rights, it should be the last one. Because if we start with, it is our right to have this, and then the others say, no, the competing right is my right as well, it's not going to assist. So let us find a way, because as we have been given an indication that perhaps we've got to find smallanyana areas, and then those areas, then this thing. There are places of worship around lakes and around caves, which are still being used even up to now. Well, and then lakes where people still go and wash whatever, spirits and so forth. And for a Westerner, it is going to be very difficult to understand. But people understand that, especially when they are having a problem, and then the problem seems to be to be this thing. So, but the essence of my message is that identify these things for the sake of South Africa. Where you stand, you are standing in a unique position where we do not understand, and then come to us and say, here is this thing. This is its benefit, it was its benefit, and then the future of the benefits is this. And then let's move from there. I think then we are going to take our country to even greater heights. There are events like Umhlanga in KwaZulu-Natal and in Swaziland, which is attended by thousands, 50,000 or so people, which generates a lot of income as well. Why don't we get proposals, concrete proposals? We are having Umhlanga. There's no distinct sleeping place, but if we have permanent sleeping places, it won't justify for the budget for the whole year, but then they can sleep in people's houses. These people's houses should be specified in this way, in this way, in this way, as we got a case study from Mithorezi. So take each other along, because we are building our country. It's young, and let us take each other along. I think we are going to achieve a lot. This interaction is becoming much more exciting now, and let us keep it that way. And that was just a foundation which, with all the humility, Khoshi, you can take us forward. What are they saying? Okay, let me just go to him.
What we have noticed, Honorable Chairperson, is that the problems Ghana is experiencing when it comes to municipalities is more or less similar with our problems here presently. They are similar. Recently we attended an international conference arranged by Ghana. They wanted to address the question of relationship between municipalities and traditional leaders. The question of land, because it involves a lot of things. Question of land, the question of service delivery and many other things. We were better when comparing ourselves with Ghana because we had already made arrangement with SALGA. We signed a memorandum of understanding of how to tackle the differences between traditional leaders and the councillors, because we are aware that there are those problems down on the ground. So we are better as of now when it comes to the relationship between us and the councillors. I mean, between us and Ghana. The other issue which I want to address is the one which was raised by the honourable member there, that of what is the institution doing to promote the cultures, what and all those things. As of now, there's no clear policy regarding what traditional leaders must do. Because I will tell you, there is the Department of Arts and Culture, they are doing something. There is National Heritage Council is doing something. There is a CRL Commission. It is also doing something regarding the culture, promoting, developing policies, all those things. So up and until we all come together and agree on a principle or maybe one policy, how to drive all these things, I don't think we'll be able to achieve a lot as a country. We are saying, because the institution is the custodian, when you allocate that function to it, allocate it with the resources and everything, even the mandate to craft policies, what, so that other structures follow what traditional leaders are saying, because they are the custodians. Now, if you check, we are just the custodians, the name, that traditional leaders are custodians of culture, custom, and what. But policies are being crafted by maybe art and culture, and of which we are not participating as an institution. So this is one other aspect. The other thing, you know, I was very much happy the honorable member when was trying to cover us. You know, yesterday when I was coming this side, I was reading a paper. There was a story written by somebody, I think it's called Sesanti. It was a star of yesterday. This person was talking about when Mandela was detained, was arrested, and he was taken to court. And Mandela had dressed with that traditional attire, and the wife did not like it, that traditional attire, because they said it will influence the masses, because culture is very strong. And you also look at what Ngugi wa Thiong'o in his book, Decolonizing the Mind. When he talks of the language, that up and until we try as Africans to write our books in our languages, we will still be glued to that old mentality. And I think what we need to do is to change our mindset and start engaging our institutions of higher learning and other many institutions in the country. And all these, you know, the educated crops of this country, to start writing books in our own languages, so that whenever you get to CNA, you are able to pick up a magazine in your own language and go through it. That will also help the people in the rural area. So there are a lot of things which are trying to assist in, you know, promoting the cultures, customs and traditions of the African people and the languages, you know. But I think it is important. The base, the foundation, as the chairperson was saying, is the institution. Empower the institution. Then you'll see what will happen. Because presently, if we can tell you that our budget, this year budget, is 18 million, and that amount is only for the travels to transport members to come to Cape Town for sittings, for what, meetings and all those things. And to have projects, we still have a problem. Yesterday, at the executive committee meeting, we were talking about the thing that we don't have mandate to have projects. About 2-3 years back, we wanted to buy a cultural village in Liseli, in Pretoria, so that it is owned by the National House, so that we are able to develop it according to our thinking. But we were denied that right. And the Constitution was cited as the document which is preventing us to do that. So these are some of the issues which I think we need to address. I was also happy to learn, you know, the issues which the chairperson was raising, that Skukune assisted Shaka sometimes back during those. There were lots. Skukune also assisted Makado. Makado spent 3 months at Skukune because the colonialists were looking for him and they did not know where he was. He spent three months, and the people in that area were very much happy because they knew that Makado was a strong leader, what and all those things, and he had finished with the whites in Sukumansdal, of which that history is nowhere to be found. You can't get it. You can't get it, because those people who were writing history, they were trying to sketch it in such a way that it assists them to achieve that which they wanted to achieve. You know, one other thing which I got in when I was reading the book is that my great-grandfather, Makado, did not want people to take his photos. He did not like being photographed. He said, if you allow these people to take your photo, wherever you go, if they are after you, they will get you easily. Because they will reflect the photo, just like the police, they show on the TV, on everything, that we are looking for this man. So Makado did not allow the whites to take photos for him. This is a very good information, wisdom, which we need to have, and we need our people to know that. So the most important thing, as I'm repeating it, is that because this institution is the custodian of our culture, custom and tradition, language, African language, please empower it, because now it is not empowered. That is the first step which we need to do. And let us also talk about the question of having so many structures doing the same thing. Let us talk about this, how to synchronize, how to arrange them, you know, so that they speak with one voice, these structures. These are some of the issues. I think the CEO will also say if he has anything.
Yes. Thanks, Chair. Through you, Chair. there was a question on what traditional leaders themselves have done in order to try and implement the legislation providing for the roles. I think the National House itself and the Department of Cooperative Government, when it was still DPLG, by the way, there are two entities here we're talking about. There's the National House of Traditional Leaders, which is the House of Traditional Leaders, and then there's a department. There's a new department now called Department of Traditional Affairs, which was together with the Cooperative Governance. They have since split into two departments. So there is now Traditional Affairs as a department. Now, there is a project to coordinate all the departments that have to do with the roles that should be allocated to traditional leaders in terms of the law. I must say that, you know, maybe because arts and culture and tourism are here today, it may seem as if, you know, we're harping on the point to say they are not coming into the party. But generally, the government departments don't really want to be coordinated to say, you must always take into account that in the work that you are doing, you must involve traditional leaders. So I think we're still having that difficulty in terms of coordinating the departments. So that was an initiative by the department together with the House of Traditional Leaders to say, here is a law that has been passed by government in 2003. We need to implement it. So implementation is still a difficulty. The policy is there, but implementation is coming very, very slowly. And I think forums like this, where we raise these issues, are beginning to say, like the chairperson was saying, from now on, let's start working together. Let's make sure that we coordinate all these agencies and all these entities and departments to work together to involve departments, traditional leaders, in what they are doing. The issue also, just to add on the relationship between municipalities and traditional leaders, there is conflict, yes, between the role played by traditional leaders and the role played by municipalities. Sometimes it's real conflict, but sometimes it's perceived conflict. Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, the role is very clear. The issue that causes conflict is the question of protocol. I mean, the councillor will say, I've been elected to lead people in this area, so I'll deliver services, bring projects, whichever way I want. Forgetting that there is a traditional leader in the area that he must respect as the leader of the people here who has been there, who will always be there. Remember, there's this thing of being elected and being born. So I think once we get to harmonize this relationship, to respect the protocols, and the role that both must play, then there'll be harmony. I mean, there are many areas where there's no conflict because there's an understanding between a traditional leader and a councillor. But there are areas where there's no respect for protocol, and there's conflict. What the traditional leaders did earlier this year, they brought this matter to the president to say there continues to be this conflict. And the president said, let there be a summit, a national summit, of local government and traditional leadership, so that these issues can be stretched out and then a way forward can then be discussed and be implemented after that. So before the end of this year, there will be that summit. We're planning to have that summit. We're working with SALGA to have that summit to deal with these issues. Private funding for the promotion and preservation of customs, I don't think that this has been really done in earnest by traditional leaders, but I think it will be a good thing to explore if there are agencies who can fund these activities. But I would think, for instance, the Department of Arts and Culture might be working with some people who have got money, to work around the issues of traditions and culture and the preservation thereof. But I'm not aware of any particular example that I can cite here. But maybe the colleagues from that department can also, assist. The clash between civilization and culture, I think it's a phenomenon that we all know it's happening. You know, our cultures, especially the original South African people, are always, threatened by the civilization. It's not just only civilization, the Western religions also came and influenced, how things are happening. And what we like to say as a fallback position is that yes, culture is not static. You know, it's dynamic, it's developing. You know, but all these are influences that, in the end, if we're not careful, will basically obliterate. You know, the very essence of what being an African, you know, means. But I think, you know, traditional leaders, you know, and many other people who are working around cultural issues, they are saying, how do you coexist as different people from different cultural backgrounds? So I think it really has to be a national debate. In fact, it's one of the issues that the president raised with traditional leaders at the beginning of the year, to say what is really a moral code for South Africans, bearing in mind that, you know, there are all these the issue of unity in diversity. How do you coexist peacefully with your different cultures as people of South Africa? So I think it's an ongoing debate. Traditional leaders are involved in it to say they want to preserve what is traditional, in the sense of being traditional as we know it in South Africa. So I think, yeah, it's a debate. Heritage sites and our traditional leaders involved in that. I cannot also, you know, speak authoritatively on this, but I think it's one of the areas where traditional leaders were saying they want to be involved in all these issues. I don't know, my colleague there may also speak whether when they deal with these sites, they do involve traditional leaders. But one interesting case, which happened just before the World Cup, for instance, while we are trying to celebrate, you know, the cultural, rich cultural heritage of South Africa, you know, you erect a monument or whatever, a statue, in King Shaka International Airport, but immediately the royal family says, no, we're not consulted, you know, in erecting this. I mean, this is a typical example of where really consultation must be encouraged and must really be practiced. To say, in order for you to do anything which has got an impact on culture, you must contact the relevant people for them to bless that. So I think there will be many examples of what we're talking about. I think the issue of how we... Yeah. Okay, I think there was just one question about the expectations of Farmacos on these issues. I think that point really has been made, to say the expectation is that in almost everything that are done in traditional communities, traditional leaders must be involved. They must be involved right from the planning stage as well as the execution stage. So that there's no... Because what is happening right now is that traditional leaders are now known as people who mourn about things. We are not involved. I think if we all begin to say we involve them right from the beginning, then there will be no mourning, because they will own whatever is happening in their area. Thank you.